Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 78 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can pop over and visit them at saatchiart.com. And remember, this little intro is about to change because they have a really great giveaway coming up for the holidays in a few weeks, which of course I will tell you all about when the moment is right. Today I am talking to Bunny Reese. I wrote about her cosmic animal gloves not very long ago, and as soon as I did, I knew that I had to get her on the podcast. Her work is filled with animals and pattern and nods to cultures from all over the world. Now, it's not only gloves that get the bunny love. She paints on literally everything. Books, paper, boots, walls, and cars. See, there is a lot to ask her. So, let's get going. Calling LA. Hi, Bunny.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, and I only found you not very long ago and was instantly like, I have to have her on the podcast.
Oh, so nice of you. Thank you.
Of course, I couldn't do it right away because you were in Paris.
Yes, I took a little break and went to my favorite city for a few weeks just to work quietly.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Okay, I'm going to ask about that in a little bit. Yeah. So all I know about you is cosmic gloves and crazy murals and amazing things. So I want to hear your whole story though. So let's go back to when you were a kid and if you were making things like that when you were little, or, you know, what was art your destiny then even?
I think it was probably always my destiny, but it's hard to tell when you're a kid because you're just like a little weirdo, you know, you're just sort of like doing your thing. And I was always really creative and I have like a pretty big imagination now and had one when I was a child, but I didn't have any other artists in my family. So I just expressed the way that I knew how to. And thankfully I had a supportive mom and father, but you know, mostly my mom really pushed me when I was little. And, I just kind of kept making and kept creating. And I really was interested in animals. Mm. You know, I think my like lifelong dream when I was a child was to be a vet. And so, I know, it's so funny. And somehow I just kept making and I kept writing and it just seemed like the natural fit for me. But I think these things just take a really long time. You know, we're like little wild beasts when we're little. And then as we get older, we kind of get the beast sort of knocked out of us from socialization. So I think it's, you have to unteach yourself some things in order to sort of tap back into what you were when you were a kid, mm-hmm. and what you probably were always destined to be.
So are you a grown up beast now?
Yes.
Good. Yes. I love it.
No less a beast though.
And so did you go to art school?
I did eventually. It took me a long time though. I have actually an undergrad in literature. Okay. And I love reading and writing. And I did that for a very long time. And then instead of, you know, going for an undergrad in art, I just decided to go directly for my master's. So I had to really fight to get into graduate school. And I did. But I was 31 when I went back to school. Mm-hmm. So I had taken a really long time to sort of cultivate what my next direction in life was. And I felt like the writing was part of my career. It just was a different part of my creativity working. So I pushed really hard and I went to school to study in France for a little while, just real formal training. Wow. Went to a small school in Brittany, just sort of mortgaged everything down to my underwear to pay to go out there. And in the meantime, I had applied to a few graduate schools and I got into San Francisco Art Institute. And I was super lucky because I had a full ride scholarship and I had worked just tremendously hard for it. So I just felt like I had a real opportunity to push. And I did. I pushed very, very hard before and after, and I still am. You know, you have a set of beliefs and hopefully your life fits into that belief system. And I'm very, very lucky. I feel grateful every day that I've been able to figure out, you know, how to make this work.
Yeah, it's so inspiring. See, I knew that this talk was going to be like that. It has to be with cosmic bunnies and everything running around. And so the work that you did during grad school, was it anything like what you're doing now?
Yes and no. I mean, I was thinking big. I had always thought big, but I was living in San Francisco, so I had these tiny little spaces. You know, space is such an issue there. And so for so many years, I had worked in tiny spaces, so I was always itching to get bigger. And I was doing a lot more installation, which was great because I would get indoor spaces where I could build things out. And I started sort of painting outside a little bit more. Just slowly getting used to it. You know, the Bay Area was very different. It was wild. People were painting everywhere and building things everywhere. And it was a different time there, but it was great because I felt like I was sort of raised as an artist there. Mm-hmm. It gave me time to incubate. I have a really wonderful community that I'm still very close with that lives there. We're, you know, we've known each other for 15, 20 years. And I think you can see bits and pieces of where I started and where I am now. And it all sort of makes sense. I mean, it's all just one big book with different chapters in it. And I think your work gets refined as you get older because it's such a long process to become an artist or to be an artist. You know, you're just practicing. Mm-hmm. You just keep practicing and practicing. There's no real finish line. So I can see where things have gotten more refined. And I can also see where I step back and I go back to other things that I was doing several years ago, but I just enjoy being able to do it. Mm-hmm. You get one shot at this life, so you better just go for it if you can.
Yeah. And, oh, I love that.
You know, so I just enjoy doing it, and I don't think too much about what I'm doing. It's more like, this feels right, and I really want to do this. But I do also have a very strict practice. You know, I work all the time. I work really early in the morning up until late at night. And, you know, my world revolves around it. So, you know, the flip side is that I still am constantly on point with what it is to be a working artist.
Yeah. And just allowing that evolution to just keep on happening.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No. I think artists run into trouble because they try to fit into something, you know, whether it's this kind of box or that kind of box. But in the end, like, as an artist, you can be whatever kind of artist you want to be, and it can change. And it's more about creative problem solving. So, you know, you have to allow yourself just to be comfortable and know that, like, your skill is your skill. It's going to come out any way you do it. Just relax into it. Don't worry too much about it, you know, and just keep making.
Oh, man, I got goosebumps. That's such good advice. I think we should just stop right there. That was just the best advice. Do you teach? You sound like a teacher.
I have. And originally when I was getting my master's, I thought I would. But I thought I'd teach college. But I honestly love working with children. And I never really considered it until the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art hired me to be a resident artist in their education department. And I got to work with children. And so I've on and off worked with kids whenever I can. And I love social enterprise projects. You know, the mural painting is amazing because it's so accessible to so many different people. And it makes neighborhoods feel good. It makes neighbors come out and talk to each other. You know, it makes you understand the vibration of a city. So I try to teach when I can. It's hard. And it's getting harder for artists to teach because there's not a whole lot of support for creative endeavors, especially in the U.S. But I try to when I can.
Yeah. Oh, you just have so much wisdom. And so what are the kids like? Like, is it just, are they still the wild beast just doing it?
Oh, absolutely. I taught homeschool for quite a few years, and that was wonderful because, you know, I had parents who were really invested in a very specific kind of teaching, and art was a high priority. And then I worked at an art school in San Francisco part-time. I was a resident artist there. And then I continued to teach classes now and then. And I just really enjoyed it, but they're crazy. They're crazy little things, you know, they have their own personalities, their own needs and wants, and they're very capable. So I just sort of let them go. I give them tools. I kind of show them a few different ways to do things and I let them go. And, you know, once you tell a child that you trust them, then, you know, the sky's the limit. They just need to know that they're being treated like a little person versus a child. Mm-hmm. And with art, you know, it's really easy with art to treat them like that because you're just giving them permission to let them go forever in their brain and really sort of explore. So it's super fun.
I used to teach, my son is in fifth grade now, but when he was in kindergarten, grade one, I would often go in and do the art with their classes. And it always amazed me how, like, I'd say 80% of them would just go, you know, and there'd be glitter and glue and a mess. And then there was this little subset that were, they're like so afraid and they just wanted the rules and were they doing it right? And, you know, because in school, that's what you'd have to do, right? There was right ways to do your math and wrong ways. And it took me a long time with those kids to just be like, there is no right and wrong. Like, just go, you know, and they it was hard for a little group of them.
Well, I think too, you know, we live in a current state where we instill a lot of fear in people for not behaving a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's awesome if you can start working with children at a young age, just to remind them that they can be whoever they need to be mm-hmm. and they don't have to be ashamed and they don't have to be afraid that the world's changing. Like even as we're talking about this.
Yeah.
So we should let them be who they need to be because they could be the one that solves world hunger. They could be the one that figures out climate control and all, you know, the melting of the icebergs. They could be the one to really sort it out for us when we get older. Mm-hmm. So I think it's always important to just let them be who they are. Yeah. And I try to just do that whenever I can.
That's amazing. What an amazing message to pass on to them. And, you know, I try and do that with my son because he used to make art a lot when he was little with me. And then when he hit about 7, he said, I don't really like making art, Mommy. And I was like, okay. And he said, I think I'm more of a writer. And so he writes the best stories. And it's just so, so cool. And I've had teachers pull me aside and say, oh, my gosh, his stories are insane. And so, you know, it's just like, you do you, buddy. Like, it's so cool to watch him turning into, you know, he's 10 now, watching him turn into whoever he's going to be.
You should illustrate one of his stories and do a collaborative self-published book together.
We've got one that's
cool.
And he wants me to send it to my editor at Chronicle.
Cool. Very cool.
It's about a squirrel named Clark who travels the world. It's pretty awesome, if I do say so myself.
That's awesome.
But anyway, I wanted to ask you about, so do you still write?
I do a little bit. It's, you know, my writing's a little bit more abstract and I did publish a children's book last year and I worked with a really amazing writer because I had sort of a very abstract idea and it's hard for my brain to do both at the same time to make the art and write the story. But what I've noticed is if I just make the art, then the story sort of tells itself.
Yeah.
And the book worked out amazing because it became this collaboration with this writer who spent a lot of time with me. And spent a lot of time with my work and understanding the concept. And so it worked out really well. I'm hoping in the future, I started working on another book when I was in Paris, and I'm hoping in the future I'll be able to both write it and illustrate it at the same time. But it's a tremendous amount of work. And I was just excited I got to do one, and I feel like it'll be the first of many, hopefully.
Oh, that's so exciting. I do a great big post with every podcast, so I'll put images from all of that in the post so everybody can see what we are talking about. So I want to know, because you paint on all sorts of things, books and paper and walls and gloves, which is how I found you. And so had you always done that? Or like, when did you venture off of paper onto other objects?
Well, I think as I started getting older, and especially being in the Bay Area, there's just like this crazy culture of things being left on the street. I mean, everywhere. It's crazy. People don't throw things out. They just put them on the street for someone else to pick up. And, you know, I grew up in Colorado. We didn't have a lot of that, but I noticed it in the Bay Area right away. So I would just drag all these things in my house, drag them in my studio. And I'm really obsessed with his history, but also form. And because I'm not a sculptor, I really like to play with the idea of my painting on different kinds of form. And the cool thing about painting on these weird objects that I'd find is that it already had a history that we didn't know about. So we could kind of make it up, or we could just create it to, you know, a new history for it. It now lives in a new space. And it became sort of this super obsessive large part of my life. And I've now done several artists in residence where I've been at a dump, or I've been at a recycle center. My studio's been off site and I get to just go through like bags and bags of stuff that get dropped off. And it's super fun. And it really something about the digging really like opens up my brain. But I just think that there is a tremendous amount of history out there that we can retell, and, you know, by making something else out of it. And it becomes this sort of strange in between object that can either be a piece of art, it can be worn, it can be sat on, it can be installed in a house as a door or a window. You know, I painted my car.
I was going to say it can be driven around in.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of different ways to paint. And that's, you know, I love painting. So any way that I can get it out there is really fun for me. Oh, I don't really think too formally about it. I just sort of go for it.
I love it. I know I'm a big thrift shopper type person, and it's like a great big treasure box. Like, there's this one that just opened up in town that's really creepy looking. It's next to a gas station, and it's like stuff's left out overnight all the time. It's got a broken sign. But this friend of mine is really into treasure hunting too, and she's like, have you been in that weird place? And I said, no, I'm kind of scared, but at the same time, totally exhilarated and like want to just be in there all day. So I have yet to go, but because we have so many good thrift shops that don't scare me, but there's like a canoe out front. And I'm like, ooh, you know, like, and my husband's like, we don't need a canoe. And I'm like, are you sure? Because it's right there.
I know. And there's so much, there's so much energy in the history of whatever, you know, the thing is that you're working with. And,
yeah,
you know, there's also like this subtle anti-consumerism message, because there's so many surfaces to work on. There's so much junk in the world. It's like, let's go through that first. And then if you can't find what you need, maybe you can get something else. But it teaches you too a lot about material.
Yeah.
You know, I had never used enamel. I had never used one shot. You know, these kinds of paints, you go to art school, and especially when you're getting your master's, it's a lot of studio time and it's a lot of theory, which I loved. I loved the research part of it. But as far as teaching yourself how to paint, it's just practice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like painting on different surfaces has really taught me a lot about all the different kinds of paint out there. And I'm still learning constantly. But even with painting cars, I've painted 4 cars at this point, and you know, I have to use really difficult paint, and I have to completely adjust the way that I work. I have to make sure I'm working from the top down, because everything, you know, takes so long to dry. And there, it really teaches you a lot about patience and about practice with materials that you're using. And I mean, every once in a while, I'll go to the art store and buy a panel. I'm not such a purist that I can't do that, and I don't allow myself to do it, but I feel like my really good stuff comes out when people just give me a pile of things to work with. I'm very strict about my paint, though. I have very specific paint that I use that I love, and I think that, you know, that's pretty normal for an artist.
You have to have something that holds you.
Something, yeah. But yeah, if you give me a pile of things, I'll kind of go for it. So.
Oh, now I want to send you a pile of things. I'll go buy that canoe from that weird store and send it to you.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, you want me to come up and paint that canoe for you?
I kind of do. So you don't strike me as a person who is afraid of materials or trying new things.
Oh no, not at all. I'm not really afraid of the world, to be honest with you. I was raised in a pretty conservative household, but I was lucky enough to be exposed for my father to traveling at a young age. So I started traveling a lot by myself in my early 20s. And I've been all over the world, mostly alone. Mm-hmm. And it's really taught me like not to be afraid of other people, to sort of understand that the world is this like big, amazing place where people are struggling just like you. Mostly we have more in common than not in common. And I think it lends itself pretty easily to everyday life and to the practice of making art, because, you know, once you go to India and you see what you see there, and once you ride a bike across China, and, you know, even once you spend a month in Paris in a studio, like there's certain things you just learn about yourself and about other cultures that give you a sense of confidence in the way that you do things. That makes sense.
That totally makes sense, and is so beautiful, and is actually very timely.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, that that's what I've found, even just with Jell's Curator. You know, I have people from all over the world, and, you know, it doesn't matter where they're from, what kind of education they have, whatever, everybody, especially, like, I'm speaking about artists now, all have the same experience. You know, they all feel blocked sometimes. They all feel this. They all get excited about X, Y, and Z. They all know what the zone is when you get into the zone. Like, everybody, doesn't matter where you're from.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the state of not only our union, but the world's union right now is really poor.
Yeah.
So people are scared. And I think it's a good thing to remember that you just have to get up and keep doing what you're doing every day and be a little bit more conscious and be a little bit more graceful and say hi to that neighbor that you've never talked to. Mm-hmm. You know, look at your community, take it to a local level, because all of that change is really going to start there. And I just think it's really important to remember that the world is not an easy place. So we don't have to be so hard on each other. Mm-hmm. Making art, you know, taking care of each other, all of those things are basic and they don't have to be complicated.
No.
So I think it's an easy thing to remind each other of as often as possible.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah.
I had a question about your traveling, because you have so many patterns and crazy things going on and eyes here and there. And do those things come from your travels or from your brain or both?
I think they come from both. I mean, my family's Eastern European, so I come from a Polish and Russian heritage. And obviously, as I've gotten older, I've really started to, like, dig through that and really understand that there's just this long history of folk art in both sides of my family. I think also traveling just exposes you to different colors, different smells, different ideas. And if you really allow yourself to be immersed in the places that you're going, it's going to adjust the way that you make and what you make.
Yeah.
And
do you find that what you're making when you're in certain places changes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the style stays the same pretty consistently. You know, I love painting animals. I love painting nature. I love painting oceans. You know, there's certain things that consistently come up with me,
mm-hmm.
but the colors change, the sense of environment changes, the conceptual part of it changes, the topics change.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely have noticed huge shifts with that kind of stuff. Even though, you know, my work at this point, people know. They're like, oh, that's Bunny. But you can tell when I've been traveling somewhere. Like, my most recent work from Paris was very soft. Hmm. It was very gentle. And it was a much more about having an experience of taking a break versus having and coming back to a place that I know is good for me versus going somewhere to understand something.
Right.
So that's a perfect example of sort of the shift. And, you know, I work a lot in order to be able to travel. That's a huge priority to me because I want to see this world so badly.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that my work continues to shift, and I hope that I get the opportunity to paint murals in as many countries as I can.
And so, yeah, how does that work? Is it, are you paid to go and, you know, to do these installations, or are you doing illustration work at home that then pays for things, or are you just selling fine art?
All of the above.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically, which I'm sure you've heard this many times over, being a working artist is really about not only, like, hustling, but sort of getting to the core of what you want to be doing.
Yeah.
And when you sort of funnel it, which is hard for artists, you have to really funnel and get a very clear idea of where you want to put your energy. When you begin to do that, I think the projects start to roll in. And I really have been pushing the last 10 years to paint big walls. There's not a lot of women that paint outside. There's very few of us that paint large.
Hmm.
And I've been pushing really, really hard, and I'm very, very lucky. I've been getting a number of commissions. People have been flying me to other countries. It's been great. And I want to keep that going, you know, within reason, without hurting myself, my body. You know, it's hard on you. But I want to keep going. And then I have more of an intimate practice, and that's at home. And sometimes I show in galleries. Sometimes I don't. I recently took a break this year because I had so many murals. I kind of wanted to take a break from showing in galleries, but I regularly show when I can. And even if it's just a group show, especially people that I've worked with for many, many years, I'll send them a piece because, you know, I have such a loyalty to the people who have supported me for so many years. But I do a lot of smaller pieces at home, and I have a lot of private commissions that I do pretty regularly, inside murals in people's houses, individual paintings. Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting ready to do one in the next couple of weeks. It's really fun. I did one in Paris at a friend's house. So it's really special to when someone owns their house and they want the mural inside. It's very special and it's wonderful.
Do you ever feel pressure?
No.
No, you just do your thing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel like at this point people are contacting me because they know my work.
Yeah.
And they know what I'm going to do.
It's not going to be a surprise.
So, no, it's going to be what it is. And I have a certain, you know, criteria. I have questions that I ask. And I'll work with you to make it work in your space. But usually we're the right fit. That's the way I look at it. We're the right fit. If you've contacted me, then you know what you're going to be getting, and you've already thought about it.
Okay, I have two questions coming out of that. Sure. One, is painting mural, is it hard on your body? Like, is it a workout? Are you exhausted afterwards?
When I paint murals, yes. It's, and I'm really, I have a very strict discipline around it. When I'm painting a big wall, I need to get to the wall at 6 a.m. And I kind of don't, I don't really go any less than that, which is hard sometimes when I'm coming in from out of state and people have hired me to do like large mural projects. It's really imperative that I'm at that wall very early before anybody else is. Sometimes it's because of the heat, because it's going to be, I know it's going to be hot and, you know, really I have till 1 or 2 in the afternoon and then I have to take a couple hours off. But also, I find that you just generally work better in the mornings. You're more clear and you can get a lot done. By the afternoon, you're tired. Mm. So I'll work usually from 6 a.m. till 1 or 2, and then I'll take a small lunch break. And if it's hot, I wait a few hours and then I start painting again at 4. And I usually go until I can't anymore, like 7.
And are you using brushes or are you using spray or how are you doing it?
Mostly brushes. I don't like to use aerosol that often just because it changes the look and the feel of the piece.
Yeah.
I really, that's sort of the formal side of me. I really enjoy brush work, but I will use spray for stenciling once in a while. If I have a wall that has a lot of repetitive stuff on it, I don't work very often with assistants. I did when I was in Manila, which was great, but just usually for blocking out color. All the detail work I do because I think it's what identifies me.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to release control on that. But I usually, you know, I put in a good like 12, 14 hour day and then I have to go home immediately and get in the bath and eat food. And then I just crawl into bed. I just am sort of on lockdown for, you know, about a week to 2 weeks. It's kind of boring. Like people are like, I want to hang out with you when you're painting. And I'm like, oh man, I'm such a dork. I don't think you want to really hang out with me.
How about we catch up in 2 weeks?
Yeah. I'm like, you know, these walls are just like, they're monsters. So you really gotta like get in there and focus really clearly. And also you're 80 feet up.
Yeah.
You know, you're on a dangerously high situation, whether it's scaffold or in machinery, heavy machinery. So you gotta like pay attention. I just plug my headphones in and I just go for it.
I guess you're not afraid of heights.
No, at all. I love being high.
And so how do you, cause I've never done anything to that scale. Do you have like a little gridded out plan so that, cause you're up so close.
Yeah.
How often do you get down and step back?
I don't do, any projecting. I think I've projected one mural. And that was because I was really crunch for time. And, the person running the project was, you know, really was like, why don't you give yourself a break? And I was like, okay. But I normally look at the architecture of the building and I build a grid off the architecture of the building. It tends to work better than actually trying to grid out a piece.
Mm-hmm.
I will also, if I have scaffold up, use the scaffold as a grid. which works great too. So I can like photograph the scaffold and then print the page out and draw on top of it. But if you look at the natural sort of architecture of buildings, there are areas that have symmetry. And if you rely on that symmetry, then you can kind of build a natural grid. I think too, like,
I think you can build a natural grid. I don't think the general population can build a natural grid. Anywho.
Well, I think too, like going back to sort of like formally how they used to do it, you know, before electricity and before all these tools, you know, I think you can trust too your gesture.
Right.
And your sort of mark making is yours and yours alone. So if it looks a little off, it's okay because that's who you are.
Yeah.
And I try, usually I'll draw a very loose sketch ahead of time. But I just try to relax into it. I can't really work that that anal. It would just make me crazy.
Well, then you've got this expectation on yourself that it's supposed to be quote unquote perfect instead of just kind of letting it happen.
Exactly. And I mean, some things are, I want good looking circles. Yeah. I want squares to look good, things like that. But I've described my mural painting as constantly just adding things to make up for a mistake that I made. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, well, I added that circle there because I dripped here and it didn't look right. Or this was kind of off centered. And yeah, it's a lot of back and forth, but it's also just adding it if it feels right. And then you get down off the lift and you kind of take a mental note of what looks right and what doesn't. And then you add to it. And
yeah. Happy accidents, know. Not mistakes. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Did you ever know Margaret Kilgallen by any chance?
She was a little before me.
Okay.
She did go to my school, but of course, you know, I honor her as most of us do.
Yeah.
She was amazing. Yeah. Amazing woman.
So amazing. And it was
tragic.
I know. It's just heartbreaking. And, but she, there's a quote from her about, how, you know, cause she painted murals and using her hands. And she said, you know, there will always be a wavering line. Like if I try and make it straight, it will never be straight because it's my hand. And she said, you know, that she finds beauty. I'm messing up the quote totally. I'll actually put the real quote in the post, but something along the lines of, you know, the beauty is in the wavering line. And I love that so much because I think so many of us put pressure on ourselves that when we sit down to make something, it has to be perfect or it's garbage. And I love the fact that it's like, you just embrace what's going to happen and work with that. It's so much more freeing. It's so much a better way to work.
Yeah. I mean, you want to have a good time.
Yeah.
You want to have fun because it's going to show in the wall.
Yeah.
It's going to show and it's going to have a vibration. It's going to have a feel to it. So if you're not having a good time, then there's no reason to be doing it in my mind. And I am strict about certain things. I mean, you've seen my smaller detailed work.
Yeah.
I'm actually like very precise, but I understand that this is a motor skill that I've trained myself. I've trained myself how to do that. And so even for me, it doesn't look perfect. It doesn't look straight to me. I try to get it as straight as I can. It doesn't look straight, but she's right. It's like, I'm not a computer or a robot.
No.
It just is who I am.
Which is,
you know?
It was just so much more beautiful. I always say there's so much more beauty in imperfection than perfection.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I just, as you're talking, I couldn't stop thinking about that video of her talking about it because it's exactly the same. And I wondered, if you'd overlapped it all in San Francisco.
You know, we just missed each other. But she's, you know, she was a real inspiration and for those of us, especially from that age bracket, who were just kicking it on the streets together and having a good time. Like I said, there were so very few women at the time, and there still are very few of us. So we all know each other.
Yeah.
You know,
we're all
we're nice to each other. Everybody likes each other. It's great. It's really awesome.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say out of that was about you doing group shows.
Yeah.
That I got a pair of your gloves.
They're on the way.
Yay. So I curated a show with the Allison Milne Gallery in Toronto. And I think, I don't know, but it seemed like it came out of me writing about you because they emailed me right after and said, would you curate this show? They had a gap in their, they had a show fall out and they were like, well, we can either do nothing or they're like, do you want to do something? And I said, yes. So of course, in my usual fashion, I picked all women. So it's all women in the show. And I'd just written about you. And they said, do you think there's any way we can get her gloves? And so we were emailing, you were in Paris at the time, which is why I knew that you were in Paris. And I am so, so thrilled that we have that pair in there.
Yeah, they're on the way. I wasn't sure what I had in my studio. I mean, I knew I had some, but I wasn't sure if they were framed. And, you know, I looked at what you were doing and how you were writing and how dedicated you clearly are to talking to artists. And I thought if I could support you too, I would in a heartbeat. So wow. I'm happy to do it.
That's
definitely.
Awesome. That's amazing. Women sticking together. I love it. I know whenever I curate a show, it always ends up swinging to like all women. And I mean, it's partly because I'm a female artist and I, you know, those are the artists that I aspire to be like, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the people that inspire me that I'm watching. And but there's also just something so nice about it. When I was studying, I have a minor in art history. And I remember just putting up my hand and being like, are there women in this book or no?
Mm-hmm.
And it just drove me crazy because, you know, I wanted to be an artist when I grew up. And I was like, does that mean I'm never going to get in the art history books? And so with Jealous Curator, I make a pretty conscious, I mean, it's also the work that I love, but I do make a choice that's like, if I get a chance to curate a show, if I can fill it with all women, I'm gonna.
I like that. You know, I mean, I don't like to talk about it that often, like the sexism that I deal with, honestly, even with painting walls outside, I have to work 5 times as hard for the same pay for the same walls. And most of the times I won't get them. And, you know, many of these large scale mural projects, I'm the only woman. And
that surprises me. I don't know why, but I mean, this whole, everything that we're going through right now surprises me because it's like, what year is it?
I know. And I think a lot of it is people don't even realize. I mean, I'm not trying to like give too much of a break here, but I also just think that you behave a certain way because you don't really realize it until it's brought to your attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, now more than ever, we're in a position where if we don't start speaking up about these things and doing it in an effective way, we're going to be in real trouble. I'm going to Washington January 21st to March with a bunch of other women. And I'm really excited. It's my first big march in DC. And I think it's a perfect way to really say, we don't know what's going to happen, but we have a voice.
Yeah.
And we're not going to let anybody tell us what we can and can't do with our bodies, what we can and can't do in the workforce, what we can and can't do at home. It's, there's no way. There's no way. I have not worked as hard as I have. I am single. I am not married. I don't have children. I have not given up the things that I've given up in this life to have this career, to have somebody take it away this quickly.
Yeah, no,
there's
kidding.
No way.
Good for you.
I'm excited for the possibility of what's going to happen. I mean, we all wanted change. We wanted it really badly. And I don't think it came in the package that we were expecting.
No, it's definitely change.
But it's change. Mm-hmm. So here it is.
Yeah,
here it is on the table.
I put up a post the other day because, you know, it's weird for me in that I'm Canadian, right? And so it's weird to watch and not be able to vote. And then now it's like, okay, well, here's the outcome. And I didn't get to vote. But what can I, you know, what can I do as a Canadian and whatever? And so I did put a post up the other day and said, you know, art has been present at every major juncture, you know, like art can make such a difference in political times. You know, you've got a voice, you can say it. And so I said to everybody, like, this is the skill you possess. If you're wondering what to do, I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do, like marching and calling your congressperson and all that stuff. But if you're feeling really frustrated, I think making work that's documenting this time, because this is an insane time. You know, if you go back through and you see the work like that was happening during the Vietnam War and different things like that was hugely impactful on art movements that didn't exist before. And like, it's amazing what a role art and creativity play in these kind of moments in time.
Absolutely. And even, you know, even before all of this craziness ensued, I had spoken recently in an interview, I think it was with Vice. And I said, you know, I'm almost anti-political in the way that I make, but I'm not trying to say anything. I'm just trying to change someone's mood.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make them feel a little bit better when they're walking home from work.
Yeah.
Or maybe like brighten up their neighborhood. And you can think that that's whatever that is, but man, it makes a huge difference. It makes a tremendous difference to be able to have someone take 5 minutes out of their crazy day to stop and look at something on the wall. They don't have to pay for it. They don't have to walk inside mm-hmm. to a place to see it. They don't have to do anything except for just stop for a second. It can literally change someone's entire day. And honestly, like if you can come home and say that you had a good day, then you're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a lot. So, you know,
well, I think it also shows that like where those murals are, you know, that their neighborhood was worth putting something beautiful on the wall.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's all different kinds of neighborhoods. You know, I've done really fancy neighborhoods. I've done urban areas. I've done really bad neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I've kind of done the full gamut and, you know, I know what my favorites are and, I just hope I get to do more. That's all I really want are opportunities to do them.
I'm sure you will. Are you going to do any art when you're in DC?
I don't know. I think it's going to be a pretty quick trip.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be an in and out.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to have a chance to, but, I love the idea of it. You never know. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe someone will hear that I'm going and be like, hey, you want to stay a few extra days?
See, that's what I'm hoping from this podcast. Anybody listening? That's why I thought I'm going to throw that out there.
Yeah. If you've got a wall for me, I'll extend my trip. I'd love to paint something.
There you go. I love it. Okay, wait, I was going to go on to the not so speedy speed round, but
sure.
I wanted to ask you about your gloves again, because I crazy love them. And so, and they kind of look like animals.
Yeah.
And so when you're working on them, do you have a plan going in or do you just sort of, do you do one first and then mirror the other side? Like,
no,
or do you
I don't
just
have
let it happen?
I have zero plan. I just know that they're going to be symmetrical.
Yep.
And they're going to have eyes on them. That's about it. I never have any plan. I have more of a plan with my larger paintings. I'm a really like avid sketchbook person.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I'll go through my sketchbooks and edit through things and then, you know, put that up on the wall and nothing will look identical to what I drew, but it's just sort of the idea. It's just like a visual, but the gloves are purely me just kind of sitting down and spacing out.
Yeah. Are they kind of meditative? Like that's what they look like to me.
They are. I mean, all my quieter painting is, and even mural painting is too, but you know, that's more, you're interacting more with people when you do that.
What's your favorite thing to do? Is it murals?
Man, I love murals, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. I mean, there are times when I just need to be in my studio because I like to spend time alone. But I really love being outside. And I love lower-income neighborhoods. They're my favorite. You know, I love areas that have sort of been forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
People are just so grateful. They're so grateful that you care.
Yeah.
That you want to like come and do something in their neighborhood. Yeah. I did a project. I mean, I did one recently in Philadelphia this year and I loved it. It was one of my favorite projects and it was in a real bad part of town, pretty bad part of town.
And how long were you there? A couple of weeks?
I was there for 10 days.
Yeah.
I mean, I was there for a minute, but, you know, I had like an old man come up to me and say that he was, you know, he'd waited 40 years for someone to come in the neighborhood to do anything.
Wow.
So, yeah,
it's heartbreaking,
I really,
but amazing at the same time.
Yeah, I love going into neighborhoods. It just it's really the best.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, you know what's so funny? I wonder if I can make this happen. Years ago, so when I first started the blog, I had a section called Jealously Curated, and I would just make up shows. If I could hang a show anywhere and pull art from any gallery, like here's a show I would do, and so I'd super famous, you know. Diane Arbus and whatever in there. And there was a gallery in DC In Anacostia, which is like a neighborhood that's, well, it's going through like a major gentrification right now, so it's very in flux. And anyway, they asked me to curate a show, and so I brought in an artist from Vancouver named Ben Skinner, who does a lot of, you know, on site work, and he did. So he had a full gallery show, but then around the neighborhood, he had sayings, vinyl lettering, and he would go and apply it to like abandoned buildings. So there was like a jewelry store that was long abandoned and the glass was broken, and he wrote on it something like, I fell in love here once.
Aww.
And it was like basically the stories of what those buildings held, that it wasn't just this rundown neighborhood, that people lived here, that stories happened here, that people fell in love, that, you know, and, you know, we're just two little white kids out there sticking stuff on these buildings. And so many people came out, and at first we're a bit like, what are you doing? Like, they thought we were vandalizing, and we explained that it was part of the show. Well, my gosh, there were just people out every single day. By the end, everybody knew us and they just loved it. And then so many of them came to the opening.
That's awesome.
It was the best experience ever, you know, and we didn't really know where we were going when we first got there. And we were like, ooh, you know, and there'd been some trouble like right before we got there. And we thought, oh, are we going to upset people or, you know, and No, people embraced it. They embraced us and it was amazing. And I kind of wonder, like, Gallery Home Floor, if you're listening, like, there's so much wall in Anacostia that could be something that could be bunnified.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very, very open and I love just getting on a plane.
Yeah.
I mean, I love, you know, I mean, right now we're kind of going in what I call the dead zone because it's like the holidays are coming up. So Everyone's going to start to like tunnel in. But I just feel like I really set up my life to experience and I'm offering what I have to offer. And I don't feel like what I do is selfish. I don't feel like what I do is narcissistic. I feel like I'm helping communities. I'm helping people. I'm helping myself. I'm doing the best that I can every day, and I assume everyone around me is as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how we can kind of like keep things going in the wake of pretty bad stuff right now.
Yeah, I love that. That is a perfect way to end and head into the not so speedy speed round.
Okay.
It is called that because it's supposed to be a speed round and I don't go very fast.
Okay.
Because I always have follow-up questions, but I'll do my best. Okay. Did you have a go-to treat when you were in Paris?
Oh, I love the meringue. Oh, I love the hard meringue that you can just eat for days.
Yeah.
Like a little mouse.
Yeah. I also have a thing. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I also have a lemon meringue pie. That's my very favorite spot that I go to when I go to Paris.
Oh.
But it's kind of like over the top. I mean, I'm like a pig when I'm there. I just eat like
No, you can't not be. It's like, hey, there's a crepe cart. Hey, look at that little place. Hey, How about another croissant and an éclair? All right.
Yeah. Why not?
I know that's my favorite part about Paris. Okay, this is a random question, but I'm curious. Do you know how to read tarot cards?
Nope. No, I don't. And I don't get them read very often. I have one or two friends that occasionally I'll let them read my tarot cards. Everyone's like, you should make a tarot deck. And I'm like, I don't understand them. So
fair enough.
One day.
Fair enough. I just thought, you never know. There's a lot of cosmic going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I don't know if you're even going to have an answer for this. What would you like to paint on that you have never painted on before? Or have you already painted on everything?
I would love to do an entire house that's all the way around it, including the fence and the garage, and then also add sculptural pieces that I could paint on as well that look like trees or look like dogs. You know, so like the entire outside looks like one big painting.
Oh my God, you have to do that.
If anyone can help me do that, I'm available.
Oh my God, that would be so good.
You know, remember Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Yes.
Like, if I did it like my work, but like, you know, just it looked really crazy, but it was all painted. Everything was painted, so it all looked like facades.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. I feel like that's going to happen. I didn't have my tarot cards read to tell me that that's going to happen, but I feel like that's going to happen.
I love that idea.
That's a really good idea. Okay, it's in the universe.
Okay, put it out there.
Yeah, it's been recorded now.
Oh, also, yeah. I'd really like to do a boat if I could. And I'd like to sew the mast, the sails as well, because I do so much quilting. It'd be really cool to hand sew the sails as well as paint the entire boat. That's the other project that I'd love to do.
Oh my God. So now you should do a house on a lake and then your boat can be like anchored to the painted dock.
Okay, great.
It's really all coming together now.
Great. I'm going to come to Canada tomorrow.
Okay, great. We're waiting for all of you. do you want me to come pick up that canoe for you? And then at least you got the bottom of a boat. okay. And then final question, which I think is maybe a no-brainer, but this is from all your animals. Would you rather be a bunny or a bird?
Oh, I would absolutely rather be a bird.
Mm-hmm. You're already a bunny. You're already a bunny.
Yeah, I would love to be able to fly. Oh, it'd be so cool if you could fly. Oh,
you wouldn't
yeah.
even need your scaffolding. You could just be up there.
Yeah, I would totally be a bird in a second.
I love it. I kind of thought that's what you would say. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all of my questions.
Oh, that was so nice talking to you. Thank you.
I loved that so much. Just, I got goosebumps, I think, 4 times. I should have kept like a little chart to see how many times I got goosebumps. And I love your work so much. And it was such a thrill to actually get to know you a little bit more instead of just emailing you back and forth. And thank you so much for those gloves for that show, because we're going to put them right in the middle of the room on a little stand, because they're just I ended up naming the show Pretty Peculiar. And so everything in it is really beautiful, but odd. And so that's going to be right in the middle of the room.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'm just really happy that you're doing what you're doing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I it's my obsession. I don't think I can stop even if I want to. well, thank you so much. And I will send you a link when this is up and out in the world.
Okay. Have a good day. Thanks.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
How many times did you get chills or nod or tear up? So inspiring. I love that she seems to be a perfect combo of free spirit and disciplined. A disciplined free spirit, you might say. That is officially what I aspire to become. Thank you so, so, so much to Bunny for taking time to talk to me and for agreeing to be in Pretty Peculiar at the Allison Milne Gallery in Toronto. It opens next Thursday on December 1st, and the party is actually from 7 till 9 p.m. And if you'd like to go, you can email your RSVP to gallery@allisonmilne.com, and that's AllisonMilne.com. And there's a link in the post on my site, thejealouscurator.com, that has all of the RSVP information there. So if you are in Toronto, go December 1st. Okay, huge thanks as always to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. And of course, thank you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.